Zachary's family came to Iowa from Bosnia, Dow came from Sudan, and Jenny from the Netherlands. The stories of these children and others are told in the new book, Zachary's Bridge, Children's Journeys from Around the World to Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Kay Fenton Smith and Carol Rowe Spaulding are the authors of the book. I'll talk with them today about why they chose to tell these stories and what all of us can learn from the lives these children have led. I'll also talk with Shreya and Annika Rao, two of the young people profiled in the book. The girls were born in India and now live in Des Moines. I'll talk with them about how they stay in touch with the culture of their family, what it means to them to be Indian and to be Iowan, and how it affects their relationships with their classmates. If you've come to Iowa from far away, we'd like to hear your story today as well. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are a state of immigrants and a nation of immigrants. And of course, children and families continue to come to Iowa from all over the world. The new book, Zachary's Bridge, Children's Journeys from Around the World to Iowa, tells the stories of children who have come here from Bosnia, the Netherlands, Sudan, India, Israel, and many other places. Later this hour, I'll talk to three of the children who were profiled in the book. But with me now are the authors, Kay Fenton Smith and Carol Rowe Spaulding. Hello, Kay and Carol.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for being with me today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kay, let me start with you. What gave you the idea for this book?
Well, you know, Carol and I were both very interested in writing immigrant stories, largely based on our own family stories. My grandfather, Fenton, was a genealogist, and he had uncovered immigration journeys of our family dating all the way back to the 1600s. So I guess growing up around my own family stories and also a very dear friend of mine throughout junior high and high school who had come from Korea really opened up my world onto having an exposure to stories from around the world. And then as adults and writers, as Carol and I came together, we both had this deep-seated interest in immigration journeys. And as parents especially, we wanted to write something that would give not only our own children but their peers something that would open those doors of understanding and we hope opportunities and inspiration to find out about not only our own journeys but other people's journeys, whether they've happened in the last 6 months to a year or whether they might have happened a century ago.
Carol, was there something in your personal past that made you particularly interested in immigrant stories?
Indeed. Actually, I am the granddaughter of Korean immigrants from the turn of the century to California. And one of the biggest inspirations for me with immigration stories is just the knowledge that my grandmother got on a boat from Korea to California when she was 28 years old in 1923. And she knew when she got on that boat that she was never going home again. And the fact that she could take that kind of journey and that kind of risk and have that kind of courage has always been a real inspiration to me. So that is really a part of why we wanted to tell a book about immigrant journeys to Iowa.
Why did you decide to focus on children?
Well, children have some pretty incredible stories, and Kay, it was actually Kay's idea to begin with to interview children because she had seen the story of Zachary in the paper. So I'll let Kay say a little bit about that.
Yes, it was really quite serendipitous and wonderful how that happened. There were articles in the paper originally about Zachary's family, who, as you mentioned, Charity, came from Bosnia and Herzegovina. And back several years ago, they had a Bosnian bakery in the Ankeny area. And I had read a couple articles where Jana, Zachary's mom, had been quoted. And I really was kind of drawn to the things that she was saying and the kind of the mini stories that she was telling right in the Des Moines Register. And I was actually able to, believe it or not, trace her down and find her phone number and called her one day and just introduced myself and introduced the concept of what Carol and I had just were hoping to do. And just asked her if we could speak with her family just to see if they might be interested. And one of many wonderful sort of stories behind the book was going to Zachary's home and meeting his family that following Friday night and staying long past dinner and just really sharing what turned out to be some personal stories and what turned out to be, of course, the title of the book, Zachary's Bridge, and just kind of kicking it off with their story from a town called Mostar.
Mm-hmm. I was surprised when I started to read the book and in reading Zachary's story, he's the very first child profiled in the book, and he actually did not immigrate here.
That's right.
Why did you choose to focus on him? He was born in the United States.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Partly it is the story of journeys. And one journey that children make nowadays is sometimes back to the homeland of their family. And if you read the story, you'll see that Zachary had a dream of going back to walk across the bridge that was destroyed during the Bosnian War and rebuilt over the course of 10 years and finished in the year 2000. And his dream was to go back and walk across that bridge and visit the city where he has family and where his parents and brother and sister were from.
Yes. And the other big impetus in choosing that, it was interesting because the whole thing took about 4 years, kind of on and off, Carol and I working on it. And we had other names for the book that we sort of liked. But after we discovered the story of Zachary's Bridge, and particularly the fact that this bridge is actually a very famous bridge in the world. It stood as a peace bridge. It had been built back in the 1600s. And the bridge itself has quite a history to it. Sadly, because it was a peace bridge, it was purposely targeted in the Bosnian War. And we also felt that this journey that Zachary took, as well as this rebuilding and crossing bridges of culture, bridges of friendship, bridges of generations, for example, for Zachary to go back and get to meet some of his aunts and uncles and grandparents who he had only known via the phone, was really special to us. So we felt that it was symbolic as we went along and wrote the other stories. We felt that it was symbolic really of every single story in Zachary's Bridge in the book. Mm-hmm. And it meant a lot.
All of the bridges that all of the children and their families had to cross.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As the idea of writing a book about the immigration stories of children sort of gelled for you, who did you envision as the audience for these stories?
Well, originally, we had thought that we wanted to write a book for children about children in Iowa so that children would have a resource in their classrooms to learn about immigration in a more personal way. Because if the child that you're reading about is actually, you know, in your neighborhood or at your school or somewhere here in Iowa, we felt that it would be that it would cause a deeper connection for children and a broader interest than if it was just, some child who's come to the United States and we're not sure where they are. So we wanted it to be Iowa children. So that's
definitely. Yeah. And the other thing that was very interesting as this book grew was that I think in the very beginning, Carol and I might have seen this as a book for much younger children initially. But as we realized the depth of the stories that these children, and not only, of course, the children are the storytellers, but as Carol and I interviewed the kids, we also interviewed, in every case, multiple generations of every single family. Mm-hmm. So as the children narrate their stories, they are also greatly influenced by their grandparents and their parents. And we found, I guess what we're calling it now is kind of, I like to say it's a universal children's book. And when you look at the information that is also put in via sidebars and photos throughout the book, these stories are not only personal journeys, but they also provide additional information for those who'd like to know more about things like the Bosnian War or how Rangoli is done in India or things like that.
Yeah, and Kay and I learned so much from doing the book that we know that it would be, first of all, it's a visual treat for anyone, but we also know that it would be a wealth of information for really anyone. And so we're calling it a family book or a universal children's book now.
So. And what age groups do you think it's really targeted at?
Well, the reading level is basically like a 6th through 8th grade reading level. And so it's ideal for a school setting for that upper elementary or middle school level.
So let's talk about some of the variety of places that the children that you profiled came from. You really clearly set out to find children who were from many different places, mm-hmm. such as we talked about Bosnia and Herzegovina, mm-hmm. Sudan, India. You have someone from Gaza and someone mm-hmm. from Israel. So mm-hmm. when you were looking for children to interview, did you have an idea in your mind where you wanted them to be from?
It's kind mm-hmm. of funny, Charity, how that worked out. As Carol and I set out, we sort of wondered ourselves, gosh, where are we going to meet all these kids? We didn't want to just write about our own personal friends. We really wanted to branch out. But we found that as we mentioned the project to just about anyone, it was amazing how many people raised their hand and said, oh, you really need to meet this family, or you really need to meet this family who's just moved into my neighborhood or my school or wherever. And it was amazing how word of mouth really brought us in touch with these incredible kids and these really incredible families who were so generous in sharing their stories.
Some of the children that you profile come from privileged backgrounds. Some of the children that you profile did not and have really suffered on their journey to Iowa. And Iowa is a place of safety and freedom for them. Was there also a hope that you could strike a balance there between children not just from different backgrounds and different places, but of different life experiences?
Well, we do have to admit that it was quite an organic process. But along the way, we did find that we had a good balance with gender, a good balance between immigrants and refugees, and a good balance, hemispherically speaking, from around the world. And so it worked out really well. I don't think we could have planned it as scientifically as it might look, because it was sort of an organic process. But we did, I think we were fortunate in having a good balance among those things in the book.
And in a moment, I'm going to talk to some of the children who are profiled in the book, so we'll get a better idea of what their stories are like. But now that the book is out and people are reading it, how is it being used?
Well, we have had some terrific response to the book. It's been so fulfilling, and we just have to thank these families who, like I said before, gave their stories so generously. Mm-hmm. But we have found not only with kids and their families, but educators are really stepping up, and we've even received letters of request to have the book in classrooms, in libraries, so that it can be used on I think even a wider scale than Carol and I had even initially envisioned. And we're excited about that. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to also continuing this community publishing project. And I do want to mention that the proceeds from the book are going to two wonderful Iowa organizations. One is the Iowa Council for International Understanding, and the other one is Cultural. And we'll talk a little bit more about those later. But we're very pleased with how readers from many different segments, both, you know, from families to libraries to educational institutions, are reaching out and really enjoying the book and using it in not only inspiring ways, but educational and entertaining ways as well.
And I would like to add, too, that for those who might be interested, this year, the summer theme at the American Library Association is actually One World, Many Stories. And so this book, we hope, would fit a lot of library programming for this summer.
We're talking about the new book, Zachary's Bridge, Children's Journeys from Around the World to Iowa. I'm talking with the authors right now, Kay Fenton Smith and Carol Rowe Spaulding. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, I'll talk to some of the children who were profiled in the book about their stories, about their journeys, and about how being from somewhere across the globe has affected their relationships with the children in their lives here in Iowa. We'll talk more about that in a moment. And if you come from someplace far away, we'd love to hear your story as well. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about the new book, Zachary's Bridge, Children's Journeys from Around the World to Iowa. The book tells the stories of children who have come here from all over the world, and I've been talking with the authors, Kay Fenton Smith and Carol Rowe Spaulding, and now we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk to a couple of the kids who are in the book. Ty Frankel's going to be with us in just a moment. He came here from Israel, but I want to start right now with Anika and Shreya Rao, who came to Des Moines from India. Hello, Shreya and Anika.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today, girls. And Shreya, let's start with you. How old are you?
I'm 13.
You're 13 years old. And what grade are you in?
Eighth
grade. Anika, how old are you?
7.
All right. And are you in second grade?
Yeah.
Shreya, how old were you when your family came to the United States from India?
I was 5 years old, so.
And Anika, were you born in the United States then?
Yeah.
Okay, so you are Indian, but you were born in Iowa, so you have a different experience from your big sister.
Actually, like, she was born in New York.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
But you guys spend your summers in India, right?
Yeah, like, we go every other summer, and, like, yeah, we love to spend time there. It's really fun.
Shreya, when you were 5 years old and you learned that your family was planning to move to the United States, do you remember how you felt?
I was like, well, I think I was pretty excited in a way and also sad because I have to leave all my grandparents and come here. But, well, I could experience a new world if I came here, so.
Did you mentioned that you spent time in New York. When did you come to Iowa?
I came to Iowa when I was 8. So.
And what brought you here?
My dad, he got a job transfer, so we came to Iowa.
And what did you think when you learned you were moving specifically to Iowa?
I guess I was excited too because I get to go to a different state and, you know, get more like different friends and experience different stuff.
At home, how are things different for you than they are for other kids who were born in Iowa and have grown up in Iowa? How are things different at home? How do you experience Indian culture there?
At home, well, we talk in our language, like, all the time. We barely use English, and we, well, like, the food, we always say Indian food, and, yeah.
And Nika, can you think of any other ways that maybe your house is different from the houses of your friends?
Well, it's different because we eat Indian food there, and sometimes we eat, like, different kinds of food here. And, well, we...
You guys do spend time going back and forth from Iowa to India. Uh-huh. When you're spending time in India, what is your life like there, Shreya?
Well, I mostly spend my time with my grandparents and my friends. And, well, I like going to the temple and I help out with my uncle's shop. And, yeah, it's really fun.
Anika, what's your favorite thing about spending time in India?
Well, I spend time with my grandparents, and I like my grandparents very much. I always spend time with them, and I play with my friends in India, too, but I miss them.
Yeah, I'll bet you miss your friends from Iowa when you're there, too, don't you?
Yeah.
What do your classmates think about the fact that you are from India and that you spend so much of your time there, Shreya?
They don't really say anything. They just think it's really cool that I'm from a different culture and that, like, my culture is so cool and it's different.
Do they like to try the foods that you like to eat? Are they interested in things like that?
Some of my friends are. They say it's really cool. Like, I sometimes give them, like, spicy food, and they really like it. And, like, yeah.
Annika, what do your friends think?
They think it's cool. Well, when I bring Indian food to my school, they think it's cool, and they say, ooh, that is so cool, because if I'm wearing some, if I'm eating something else than other food, like, and it's different from the other food.
So do you ever feel like, because you're Indian, do you ever feel like you don't fit in at school, Annika?
Well, no, because it's just,
like,
Shreya?
Well, not really, because we sort of know, like, the American culture, too, so we fit in a way.
When you're in India, do you ever feel like you don't fit in there?
Not really, because, again, I know Indian culture, too, and so I would, like, fit in with my friends. Like, if my friends, like, I don't know, let's say go shopping or Indian food or anything, like, I would know what I'm doing and, like, not be lost.
Do you dress differently when you're visiting India than you do when you're in the United States?
Sometimes, not all the time. Like, we dress up in, like, Indian clothes and, yeah.
When you were interviewed for this book, Shreya, particularly, you talked about wanting to move back to India. When you grow up, do you still want to do that?
Yeah, I think. I love, like, spending time with my grandparents and, you know, I miss them a lot, so I think I will, maybe.
Also in the book, you talk a lot about the experience of going to your uncle's wedding, and you describe that experience. It is very different from weddings in the United States. And your uncle was married in an arranged marriage, and your grandparents tell you that someday they'll find a boy or a man for you. How do your friends react when you tell them about arranged marriages and how things work like that in India?
They act really surprised because they're like, oh, like, that's not fair, and, you know, you should get to choose your own guy, you know, you should, and I sort of explained to them that it's like, it's not like that my grandparents would pick a guy for me and, like, I have to get married to him or something like that. But yeah, then they understand, so.
Anika, do you want to move to India when you grow up too?
Yeah, because I just miss my grandparents, and sometimes I miss my friends right here, and I just like my grandparents very much because I go every 3 months, and, like, I just love them so much.
Yeah.
It is very fun.
It must be hard to be so far away from them.
Sort of.
Maybe things change as you get older, huh, Shreya? Well, Shreya and Anika, thank you so much for sharing your story today. Shreya and Anika Rao live in Des Moines, but they are from India. They spend some of their time there. And Kay and Carol, I want to bring you in on this. I described a little bit what the story of Shreya and Anika was like. It talks a lot about how things are different in India. It describes an arranged marriage and talks a little bit about different kinds of food and different kinds of clothing. What do you want children and their parents and teachers who read this chapter of the book, what do you want them to take away from this?
Well, Charity, that's a great question. And I think a part of it is kind of what Shreya and Anika were just saying, which is that they really celebrate both of their cultures. And I admire that about these sisters and their family, how, for example, they have their kitchen altar right in their home every morning. And they pay homage to that. And they just do a lot of things that are very special to them. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, they are equally what you would call, quote unquote, regular Iowa kids, too. And I love that they have that balance. And I love that they have so much love for their family in India as well as their life here in Iowa. And mm-hmm. I really admire them for that. And Carol and I learned so much in all of these stories, and certainly in Summers and Sagar, and certainly enjoyed the food that Shreya and Anika were just mentioning. We were able to go to their home on many occasions and be able to enjoy the Indian food and so many wonderful traditions, and that really meant a lot too. So thanks to both of you for sharing that.
And I would just add too that these girls are a really excellent example for what it means to be bicultural in the 21st century. When I was growing up, because I'm half Korean, I had a lot more difficult time being accepted because I looked different and because my mother looked different. And it's beautiful to me to see how easily bicultural these young ladies are, and I hope that serves as an example for Iowans.
That's
too.
Really good, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I want to bring Ty Frankel into the conversation now, and he came to the United States from Israel. He also lives in Des Moines. Hello, Ty.
Hi.
How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm very good. How old are you now, Ty?
I'm 13.
You're 13. Okay. So this the story about you in this book is very recent.
Yeah, it's from August.
Okay. And
that's a good story, too.
This chapter tells about the year that you turned 13 and your bar mitzvah, but I want to go back before that. When did your family come to the United States from Israel?
We actually came when I was one, and we went to California, and then we moved back to Israel when I was about 3 or 4, and then we moved to New York when I was 5, and moved to Iowa when I was 6.
Why did your family decide to move back to the United States when you were 5?
Because of my dad's job, and he's a professor now at ISU, and he teaches economics, and he's taught at Tel Aviv University. Then He's taught at Stanford and Cornell and now ISU. So,
when you were a child, you did speak Hebrew in your home. Did you learn Hebrew and English at the same time?
I learned Hebrew when I lived in Israel, and when I was one, I probably learned a little bit because you can't learn the whole language when you're one.
Sure.
And then I moved to, you know, America, and I learned a little bit of English. Then I moved back to Israel and learned the rest of it, and then I moved here, and I already knew English, so it was easy to catch on.
All right, so there wasn't a language transition that you really needed to go through.
Yeah.
Do you have to work at keeping your Hebrew up to speed?
No, because every summer my grandparents and a lot of my relatives come over from Israel and they talk Hebrew and stuff, and my mom is a native like Hebrew speaker, so she and also my dad, he learned it when he met my mom. He learned Hebrew, so we speak it most of the time in my house, so it's easy to keep up.
When your classmates find out that you're from Israel, how do they react?
They just think it's pretty cool that I'm from Israel and Jewish, and they want to learn about it.
Having a homeland that's in the news quite a bit because of violence or because of controversy, does that make its way into the classroom? Do other kids hear about Israel in the news and ask questions about what's going on?
I don't think so. They don't really ask any questions about what's going on with Israel.
The story in the book that you told is about your bar mitzvah. What does it mean to have a bar mitzvah or to become a bar mitzvah?
It's really great. It's a hard process to, you know, learn all the chants in Hebrew and stuff and all the melodies, and you have to recite a speech and do a speech and stuff. But to be a bar mitzvah, it's like you turn 13 and you're like more responsible for stuff that you do instead of your parents.
So this is a ceremony that you go through that basically means that you're a man now, right?
Yeah, it is.
Were your friends at school who are not Jewish, were they interested in this process that you were going through?
They were a little bit. They asked about what do you say during the bar mitzvah, and what do you have to do to get ready for it?
And one of the things that you have to go do to get ready for it is do a lot of memorization in Hebrew. And you really had an advantage over other kids at your synagogue because you are a native Hebrew speaker. Did that make it a lot easier for you than it was for the other kids who were going through the same thing?
Yeah, a lot of kids, they said it was really hard to learn the Hebrew and the melodies and the, you know, the words at the same time and memorize them. But I just had to do two of those three, so it was a lot easier for me.
Does your family travel to Israel very often?
Last time I went, I was seven, the summer of when I was seven, the summer of when I was eight. But we haven't gone back there. We're probably maybe going to move there in the next year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and come back here for a couple of years.
Oh, wow. So you could be spending a lot more time in Israel in the near future.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you to be Israeli when you're living among all of these kids who were born in Iowa and have spent their lives here? What does it mean to know that you come from somewhere else?
It's really great. You know, all the kids are mostly, you know, from America and stuff, and I'm from Israel, and it's a place I can go to. You know, the U.S. is my home, and Israel is also my home, so it's great to have another place that you can go to and all your relatives are there and everything.
Have you ever had any problems with kids teasing you or making fun of you because you're from somewhere else?
Maybe once or twice, but not that much.
Not much more than anybody has to deal with then.
Yeah.
What do you want other kids who read this book to know about Israel and about you?
That it's not maybe like what they hear in the news. It's pretty much just like here, but they speak a different language. It has malls and stuff, and has, you know, beaches, and it's really fun to be there.
All right. Well, Ty, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Ty Frankel came to Des Moines from Israel by way of other places, but he is profiled in the book that we're talking about today, Zachary's Bridge, Children's Journeys from Around the World to Iowa. And we have a break here in just a moment. So just briefly, Kay and Carol, what do you want people to take away from Ty's story?
Ty's is a beautiful story, too, of a journey that isn't really, you know, one way and for all time from Israel to the United States, but rather it's back and forth because of his family, because basically, you know, his mother is Israeli and his father is American. So they're a bicultural family and they go back and forth. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that even though the journey is not so much geographical for all time in Ty's life, one of the things that his chapter talks about is kind of an interior journey to what it means to be Jewish. And for an Israeli boy, of course, that's incredibly important. And so some of the journeys I would describe as not only exterior journeys, but really interior journeys and growing into your culture. And Ty's story is a really good example of that.
We're talking about the book Zachary's Bridge, Children's Journeys from Around the World to Iowa. With me today are the authors Kay Fenton Smith and Carol Rowe Spaulding. We'll be talking more about the book and about some of the other stories in the book in just a moment. We'd like to hear your story as well. If you immigrated to the United States and have made your way to Iowa, we'd love to hear your story. And if you came as a child, tell us what it was like to go to a new school, to experience a new culture, and how other people reacted to you. The number to call is 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about the new book, Zachary's Bridge, Children's Journeys from Around the World to Iowa. It tells the stories of children who have come here from all over the world, from Bosnia, from the Netherlands, Sudan, India, Israel, Gaza, and other places. And we'd love for you to join our conversation today. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. If you came to the United States from somewhere else and made your way to Iowa, we'd love to hear your immigration story, particularly if you came here as a child or if you brought your children here. Tell us about the experience that they had or that you had. 866-780-9100. With me right now are the authors of the book, Kay Fenton Smith and Carol Rowe Spaulding. And Kay and Carol, some of the stories that you tell in the book are of children who came here from places that are troubled, such as Dow, who came from Sudan, and he came here with his mother and siblings, but not his father, because his father had been killed. And you also tell the story of a young man who came here from Gaza, and his journey wasn't nearly as frightening, but again, that's a very troubled place that he left behind. Mm-hmm. Were you hoping to include some of these more dramatic stories to teach children what it might be like to be from somewhere where it's not safe?
Well, I would say that we were hoping to have a mixture of different kinds of immigration stories because, you know, it is true that some people came to Iowa because they had to and because they are not able to go home. And as you're well aware, I'm sure, and as listeners are well aware, former Governor Robert Ray set an example in the 1970s of welcoming the Southeast Asian refugees after the war to come to Iowa. And so we have a tradition of welcoming those from other countries. And but we do have to remember that even though they are welcome, you know, many immigrants would choose to remain, you know, in their homeland, as I think most people would. And so, it isn't always a choice.
Well, and you did decide to include one of the stories from 1975. You write about Kong, who came mm-hmm. here when mm-hmm. she was 8 years old from Laos. And again, this is an old story. But why did you decide to include her story of being one of the boat people, as they're called, along with these other more contemporary stories of immigration?
Yes, Charity, that's a great question. And I think one of the reasons is because this is another example of a wonderful multi-generational story. And really throughout all the stories, we found some amazing connections between not just the kids and their parents and what I think most Americans would see as just kind of a typical nuclear family, but really this multi-generational family, like Shriya and Anika were just telling about their grandparents in India. I think Kong's story is a great one of she is actually in, you know, she is in her 40s now, and she is a teacher here in Iowa. And in that story, you notice that Kong is the main storyteller, but her mother also tells part of that story, as do her three children, who are now the ages of Anika and Shreya and Ty. So we really like the fact that that was an example of full storytelling. And the other thing that was very interesting as Carol and I went along was that on many occasions when we were interviewing some of these families who did come from a refugee situation, in some instances the kids really hadn't heard the whole story until now. So it was a real sharing of a deeper family story and really thinking about, especially in the case of the Southeast Asian refugees, how they truly had to leave their homelands and many times parts of their families behind, and how for the Thai Dom people in particular, Iowa is now considered their homeland. So we felt that was a very touching story and a very Iowan story.
Definitely.
And of course, I just want to mention too, of course, that Governor Ray so graciously wrote the foreword of the book, and that has a lot of meaning for Carol and me, and we hope that it has a lot of meaning to anyone who picks up the book, and that was just a wonderful contribution that he made to this project.
Lucas is on the line from Ottumwa with his story. Hello, Lucas. Lucas, are you there? Lucas? We seem to be having some telephone trouble. Lucas, I'm going to hang up, and please call us back. We'll get you on as soon as we can. We've been having a little bit of telephone trouble recently, so hopefully we'll get this worked out. I'm going to try to bring Jesse on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hello, Jesse. Again, Jesse can't hear me. All right. We will try to get the phones fixed, and I hope that that we can get your stories told. If you have a story to tell and you're near a computer, please send us an email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. If you go to Facebook and go to Iowa Public Radio, you can leave a comment there, and we hope to get the phones fixed here shortly. The number to call is 866-780-9100. I apologize for the difficulties. We talked a little bit about some of the different ways that this book can be used and could be used. Do you have plans to, and are you in the process of working with teachers and other educators to bring this book into the classroom?
Yes, Charity, we are. In fact, one of the things that Carol and I would like to point out is that over the 4 years that we were working on the book, it was not sitting in our computers or in a manuscript just on the shelf somewhere. It has been, in fact, brought into classrooms it's been now, gosh, we're going on at least our fourth year of bringing these stories and hands-on multicultural activities into classrooms across Central Iowa through Culture All, which is one of the nonprofits who will benefit from the book. And that has been really exciting. For example, I was just out at St. Pius last week, and as we read excerpts from Kong's story that you just mentioned from Southeast Asia, we did our own part to celebrate the Thai Dom New Year, and actually through what's called the Tot Kons, which are tiny dragon. These are bean bags that are, it's a regular decorative bean bag, but they have long dragon tails on them. And the kids played the games that have been brought here to Iowa from Southeast Asia. And it was a lot of fun for them, not only to read parts of the story, but to actually be involved in an activity that comes from another part of the country that's now very Iowan, too, and is celebrated each year at the Iowa State Fairgrounds. And that's only one example of things that we're doing. For example, from Dow's story and another family's story, which is not in the book, but our friends who came from southern Sudan with their different tribes, bringing their dancing and bringing their culture and bringing, for example, Shreya and Anika's family, bringing the wonderful tradition of Rangoli and going into classrooms and bringing these things to life. It's been not only educational, but a lot of fun. So we continue to do that, and we're excited about it.
All right. We're going to try to bring Lucas on again. Hopefully the phones will work now. Lucas, can you hear me? No. All right. And unfortunately, we're just going to have to, I think we're going to have to do without callers today. I apologize. Thank you so much for trying to call. We'll continue to work on our technical difficulties here. I saw a press release a couple of weeks ago about your book saying that there was a ceremony mm-hmm. where 100 children were being sworn in as U.S. citizens and that you were there handing out the books. And some of the, mm-hmm. the kids who were profiled in your book were mm-hmm. handing out copies of the book. Mm-hmm. Why did you want to be a part of that event?
Oh, that was just it was a really memorable day. We were honored by the presence of our current governor and his wife, as well as former Governor Robert Ray, and the presence of Sukhu Radia, the president of Bankers Trust, who was responsible for helping to donate one copy of Zachary's Bridge to each of the children who became citizens that day. And so we were joined by several young people. We got to shake their hands and help them celebrate this really important day of becoming a citizen by also giving them a book that talks about the young Iowans who also became citizens, who are the stories that we profiled.
Talking to Shreya and Anika and Ty, none of them really felt that they had had problems making the transition to, mm-hmm. to being in schools here in Iowa. But some of the children that you write about did have difficulties. They mm-hmm. they were teased about where they were from and who they were at different times. Are you hoping that having this book out there can help other children make an easier transition into schools?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the story of Rashad, for example, he does report about difficulties in school. And
Rashad, you know, is from Gaza.
He is the one from Gaza, yes. And so he does talk about how, you know, he was bullied when he first got to the school, but he refused to fight with the child who would have, you know, willingly gotten into conflict with him. And he said, you know, I don't do that because that's how wars get started. And, you know, so there are really wonderful ways that I think these children have dealt with some of the difficulties that they have faced.
Definitely. Yeah. And I would also add to that that as we go into the classrooms, one of the things that we really like to encourage the kids is that as Carol and I wrote this book, yes, we had this wonderful excuse to ask people from different cultures all about themselves. But we like to tell kids and people of all ages that you don't need an excuse to just ask someone about their culture if you're truly, genuinely interested in it. And our experience certainly was that people are, they're proud of their cultures, and it really means a lot to them to have opportunities to share that. So, reaching out is something that we certainly hope will be a takeaway from Zachary's Bridge.
One of the things that you wrote about in the number of different chapters are the religions that the children practice. Mm-hmm. And of course, we talked to Ty, who is Jewish. We talked to Shreya and Anika, and they're Hindu, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there was another story in here about two girls from Taiwan who
yes.
are also Hindu.
And they're Buddhist.
They're Buddhist.
Oh, Buddhist. I'm sorry about that. And Rashad, of course, is Muslim, and his father is an imam. And it seems to me that reading some of the stories, it is religion that brings some of the differences really into relief for these kids. Did you find that?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And that's largely because for much of the world, what it means to be ethnic is not separable from one's religion. And I think, you know, our tradition in the United States of separating church and state isn't necessarily the case for people from other cultures, because their religion is their culture. And so it's an opportunity to learn that, you know, you can be American, but also be from a very specific religious background.
One of my favorite parts of Rashad's story was when he was talking about playing video games with a friend mm-hmm. who is not Muslim. Mm-hmm. And it was time to pray. And his friend was trying to take advantage of the fact that it was mm-hmm. time for Rashad to pray to win in a video game.
Yes, all in good fun. But
that's really a wonderful moment. But yes. It also shows that Rashad has dealt very well with mm-hmm. with integrating his religion into his life with his mm-hmm. friends. Mm-hmm. There are things going on in our culture and in our country that have brought some of the conflicts between different religious groups and different ethnic groups in our country into sharper focus and created some problems. Did you find that any of the children that you had interviewed were having increasing problems because of cultural shifts?
Not in particular, no.
Although it was what brought Rashad and his family here.
It was, and I would say that, you know, it's probably inevitable that at some point in being an American and being, you know, non-Christian, because we live in a Judeo-Christian culture, you know, that problems will arise. But what I think is really hopeful is that this generation of children deals with it better than I think we can say about any generation prior, and that they really set an example for how to be bicultural, how to be who you are and where you come from, and at the same time an American. They just have set a wonderful example in this book.
They have. And the other thing that Carol and I found out, and this certainly wasn't scientific research by any stretch, but it just so happened across the board, especially with learning language and things, that kids often get teased about if they weren't pronouncing words correctly and that sort of thing. We found that for those kids who had come when they were younger, let's say K through 2, they had virtually no problem at all because they had started with their friends, where our friends from around the world who had come and started school in Iowa, let's say in grades, you know, fifth or in middle school, they found a little bit more of the teasing and a little bit more of the problematic situations. And that was just kind of a general, I would say that was just kind of a general trend.
I want to share an email that we just received from Trong. He says, I came to Iowa from Vietnam. I was one of the boat people. I came when I was 14 and without my family. I felt welcomed by the Iowa people. My family eventually came to the United States and are all residing in California, but I chose to stay and work here in Iowa because of the warmth of the people here. I went back to Vietnam several times, but Iowa feels more like home now than Vietnam. So thank you for giving me a better life. And Trong, I'm so glad that you found a home here in Iowa. Kay and Carol, as this book goes out into the world, what is your dearest hope for it?
Well, I would like to quote my friend Ann Naffier, who has worked for many years with immigrants, and she said something that helped to inspire the book from the beginning. She said, Iowa is unique in terms of immigration because we have the chance to do it right. And I think Trong's story that he just shared with us is one example of that, of how Iowa can be a place that is especially welcoming and unique in immigration history.
Why do you think that is?
Well, partly because of Governor Ray's important choice, which was not, I am told by people who lived in Iowa at the time, it was not an especially popular choice. It wasn't a universally accepted. And yet he was forward thinking enough to know that to invite the Tidon people here would be good for our economy and also good for a generation of people to see that Iowa's future depends on immigration.
Having told the stories that are in this book, you must be coming in contact with a lot of other people with great stories to tell. Does this give you ideas for a future project?
Well, to some extent, it gives us ideas for a future project, but we really want to encourage others, and especially young people, to write their own stories. And as we say when we're in classrooms, whether you were born in Iowa or India or anywhere in between, you have an important story. You have an important family story. So we like to encourage, like I said, especially young writers, to ask your family, ask your grandparents, aunts, uncles, about your own stories. And remember that they're all very special and very worth telling and keeping.
Well, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity. It was our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
The book is Zachary's Bridge, Children's Journeys from Around the World to Iowa. And the authors are Kay Fenton-Smith and Carol Rowe Spaulding. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Brian Dow. Technical support from John Pemble in Des Moines. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. Send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, Women in Farming. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.